Hey, hello there once again. Welcome to another Alpha Rubicon Campfire Chat. This is your host, JohnBot 007, with you again this month. Apparently the guy with the mic once again. Whether that's good or bad will remain to be seen. Let's see, last month we were talking about staying motivated, and in the context of that chat, I kind of started to broach the subject that I thought we might cover tonight, and that is simply, why do I need a team? What's a survival team? What's it all about? Why do I need one? Why do I want one? It occurred to me that, you know, we probably mention it on the outside site in several places, and the concept might be a little bit foreign to somebody starting out. It wasn't my case. Going back when I started to get into this, I had kind of a warped idea about survivalism. I don't know if warped is really a good word. Perhaps undeveloped would be a better way to say it. You know, I suffered of the disorder which has come to be known as backpack survival syndrome. Yes, that was me. I admit it. Several people have suffered from this, and several more will. And hopefully most of us at some point realize that it's really, well, it's just a bad idea. Having survival skills, good. Having a big backpack full of equipment, good. Relying on those two things alone, bad. Real bad idea. A lot of people kind of start off in that same area. They've got a big backpack full of gear, and they're going to go somewhere. They may not even know where they're going. In my case, I really don't think I knew where exactly I was planning on going. I may have had a rough idea. There were some areas I hunted. I, you know, sat there thinking, oh, I could come here, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I didn't do anything logical to, oh, I don't know, you know, cache food and supplies there ahead of time. You know, it was more of an idea. And I know people that have, unfortunately, never really progressed beyond that part. That's a pretty dangerous area to stay in. You don't want to get too comfortable in there. See, there's a lot of times you'll have, a lot of people tend to stop at the, they have a general concept of survivalism. They have an idea that they want to survive. They have gone to some lengths to procure some equipment to that end, and they've probably spent some amount of time reading about some skills, and may have even gone out and practiced a few. At some point, that's gotta change. You've gotta actually get out there and do it. We have a saying here on the site, I'm sure it's on here somewhere, facta non verba, which is Latin for actions, not words. And we have a saying that goes along with that in the Rubicon, and that's, you don't know something until you've done it. And to take it one step further, I've heard it said, you don't know something until you've taught it. And that's actually true on a lot of levels, too. But one thing at a time. First, you've got to actually do something. You can go out and buy all the surplus stuff and all the stuff in the articles, and you can read the 10,000 lists of equipment you should have that will, quote, save your life, unquote. But and that's great, you know, if you've got money to spend on garbage, I mean really good gear, yeah, that's a good thing to have. But, you know, you're going to need some experience with that equipment. There's a lot of people that have a garage full of stuff they've never used. And, you know, there are things that we have as a team right now that we haven't actually practiced, and that's going to change too. It's a matter of time we get to do things together at this point right now. But we constantly strive to take at least one or two things every time we're together to work on, to have some actual hands-on time as a group with them. Because I'm here to tell you, if you've got, you know, a whole bunch of plastic and some tape and some kind of filter doohickey with batteries for a safe room, you know, that's great. But if you think you're going to get that up in time to save your life when you find out something's happened that makes you need a safe room, no, it's not going to happen. That's just a fact of life. Now, that I'm using that as an example because that was one thing that was mentioned not too long ago in the Rubicon and the course of discussion on safe rooms and getting them put together and so forth. There are a lot of areas like that. One area you see, a lot of people have the idea, well, when stuff goes, you know, wrong, when the fecundant material hits the acylating device, well, I'm just going to, well, we'll farm. You know, we'll have animals, we'll farm. Yeah, we'll can food, we'll dry goods, we'll make jerky, all that stuff. Yeah, I've got the LL Beans dehydrating pan, I've got the number 10 meat grinder, I've got one of those grain mills. Yeah, I got that for Y2K, that's great. You know, and they'll read down the list of stuff they have. What's really short is the list of stuff they've used. There are a lot of areas that I have no experience with, no practical experience with. And a lot of them have to do with food. That's not really great if you're a survivalist. And that can get expensive, too, because I'm here to tell you, I lost a whole lot of food. I had an infestation problem. I had a bunch of stuff. A lot of it was stored since before Y2K that hadn't been rotated out. A lot of that stuff did get rotated. But a lot of the staple stuff didn't, and it wasn't packed right. It wasn't stored right. It was just wrong. You know, there were some creepy crawlies in there, and it wasn't pretty. And I threw out probably enough food to feed a whole lot of people for a long time. But there was an upside to that, and that was that I learned what not to do hands-on. and that's a very big part of having a team, because you are not going to be able to have enough free time to cover every area of survivalism and do it in-depth, hands-on, and learn all the lessons from success and failure that you're going to be proficient at it and to really know the area. You just can't do it. You can't be all things to all people. I believe I said that last time as well. But, you know, if everybody has a certain area that they work on and everybody has a pool of experience where they all bring something to the table, you're going to be a lot better off. You're going to be stronger for it as a group. You're going to be better prepared for it as a group. And that means that you and your family are going to be more prepared and more protected. And that is actually probably the definition of what being a survivalist is all about and what a survival team is there for. It's there because there is strength in numbers. It's a very general, you know, concept. And there's a lot of differences from team to team, retreat to retreat, what people will consider a team, the way they choose to do things, the way they set things up, what's a retreat, do we need a retreat, you know, a lot of that is personal choice. It doesn't have to be any more complicated than you choose to make it. That can certainly sound that way. You'll see some teams in action if you're lucky enough to know any other survivalists. Or you'll hear people talking about stuff and you'll think, man, these people are just wild. I mean, they're on the ball. They've just, you know, they've got it all figured out. But, you know, usually what you'll see is that's you're looking at a particular area that's that team's strength. That's where they shine. It's their strong point. Every team is going to have its strengths, and every team is going to have its weaknesses. That's also what part of being part of the survival community is about. Once you get to the point where you've built a team, you have a retreat, whatever your definition of a team or a retreat may be, it may just be your family, it may be a group of families, it may just be a, you know, could be a bunch of single guys that have a hunting cabin somewhere. It could be anything it needs to be for you to have a network of mutual aid and support. That's pretty much what it's all about, and that's what being a member of the survival community comes down to, too, because no matter how good your team is, you're not going to know everything. It's just not going to happen. If you can get together with some other folks and train, share ideas, what have you, interact, you're going to come away better for it. That's what the Rubicon is basically all about. That's what this site is here for. It's for providing information to average people that are have an interest in this area and need that information. That's why it's here. That's why we pay the bills. That's why we buy the web space. That's why we write the articles, because we want you to know this stuff. We want to share what we've learned because it wasn't easy. I mean, I've learned an unbelievable amount of things in the time I've been here, and hopefully I'm doing something about giving a little bit of that back as I continue to grow and progress, which is actually why I'm sitting here in front of this microphone tonight, I guess. But that's a really big part. People have a stereotype of survivalists as being very introverted people. You know, they're somewhere deep in their little cavernous bunker with a can of beans and some freeze-dried bacon and two machine guns and a bunch of big signs on the yard that, you know, front lawn of Survival Dream World there that say keep off or else. You know, that's not what it's about. If you look back historically through the ages, this country was basically founded by people that were survivalists and didn't know it. Most of your frontiersmen, your explorers, your early Americans, I mean, they were all people that, had survival skills. How do we know this? They survived. So, all this is really about, it's, you know, there's no political agenda that goes along with being a survivalist. It's not about any of that garbage, you know. It's about simply surviving. It's about doing what's right to protect you and your family. If that means you're part of a large organized group with excellent skills and military type training and what have you, yada yada yada, that's great. Go for it. If that makes you happy and you can pull that off, good deal. But you know, don't feel like you're not a quote real survivalist unquote if it's just, you know, your family and four or five people that you really trust that are really close friends, you know, and maybe the family's country home or a cabin, or, you know, you might not even own anything rural. There's nothing that saying that you have to live out in the country to be a survivalist. Lord knows I personally wouldn't choose to live in a city, especially not right now. Large populated areas, probably not the wisest choice to have anything you choose to recall or call a retreat, but, you know, hey, work with what you got. You can do it. I've seen some amazing ideas, and, you know, people that live in apartments in the city, and not only can you get out of the city, but you can actually survive in the city. It takes a lot of out-of-the-box thinking, and I've seen a lot of that by people that have thought about this, and it's amazing, but personally, my personal slant on it is, yeah, get the heck out of the city. but, you know, that's my personal way of looking at it. Whatever works for you. But, you know, you don't have to have whatever the big... That's I keep running into this with people that are new, and I talk to them about survivalism, and they're very interested in it, and you can tell they really want to go there. The thing that's holding them back from doing things, from actually getting stuff, actually, you know, dedicating part of their budget towards getting some preps, towards some other time towards finding people to train with, to learn some of these skills with, to learn some of these skills from, it's the stereotypes. The stereotypes are going to kill more people than anything else in the long run, because they're going to be the things that kept people from thinking they could do it. Don't let that happen to you. There is nothing you're going to read about here that you can't do. I've seen mothers of three do it. I've seen 12-year-old kids do it. Any skill that's on this site, you can learn. And not only can you learn it, but you can go on to teach it, which actually brings us to another aspect of what a team is all about. I basically just told you can learn anything, and that's true. You can learn the basics of everything, but if you really want to master one particular area, no matter how you choose to divide those areas up, for instance, on a small to medium-sized team, I don't know, you might have a combo guy, a sec team guy, somebody that's your medic, an engineer, technician, somebody that's in charge of logistics, you know, keeping an eye on food storage, how everything's working. Everything might be overseen by some type of a team leader aspect that's going to have the overview to really keep things on track. You can set it up any way you need to. The important part is that each area, no matter how you choose to divide it up, is going to have one person that's going to go, you know, not just part of the way. They're not going to have an overview. They're going to do whatever it takes to become a master of that area. And unfortunately, that's one of the down... There's strengths and weaknesses to any arrangement, but one of the downsides to having a small team, I can tell you from experience, is that each person has to cover a whole lot of ground. So you're only going to have enough time to go so far with each area. But, you know, again, it's an ongoing process. As a team grows, you're going to find one of the areas that you're covering that you're a little bit better at, and hopefully you'll add somebody to the team that will take up the slack in one of the other areas. But, you know, if you really want to have hands-on experience in every aspect of something, you've got to get out there and do it. And the other part of that is you're not just learning it for yourself, and you're not just learning it so that you can provide that service and that knowledge to the team. You're also there because eventually you've got to look down the road. Now, you're just starting out. You've got a lot to learn. You've got a lot to do. You, depending on your point of view, you probably don't have much time to do it, because we all want to be as prepared as we can be in the least amount of time possible. Now, to do that, we've got to delegate responsibilities by dividing things up. But once we get a little past that, where we've got everybody that has their area, we've got to do what's known as cross-training. You've probably already heard the term, whether it was from a Nike commercial or at your place of business. The corporate world considers cross-training important because it only took them about 100 years to figure out that people that only know one tiny little area are nowhere near as useful as people that have a good basic overview of how things work. And that's just as true for a survival team as it is for IBM or any of your large companies. You really need to stretch out beyond the few areas you're comfortable with. And that can be scary at times. There's people that are just flat out afraid of some stuff. They're afraid that anything technical is just, well, I can't do it, I can't learn that. Oh, it's got buttons and he's using big words. Well, I mean, that's just like anything else. It's scary until you start learning it. Once you get there, you're going to find out, well, gee, this isn't as hard as I thought it was. Or, you know, maybe it'll still be difficult, but you can do it because the person before you did it. And it's just a matter of time and effort. You can look at, you know, the largest, most insurmountable obstacle. If you keep working at it, you're going to get there. You're going to get over it, or around it, or under it. Whatever you have to do, you'll get there. You'll get to the other side of that. And that's why I mentioned a little bit about teaching earlier, because ultimately, besides the fact that you want to cross-train and share the expertise and skill that you grow in your particular area you're working on, you're going to find when it comes time to teach that to somebody, that's the other half of your education right there, because you learn just as much teaching something as you did learning it. It sounds a little bit odd, but it's actually true. Whether you're a musician or an auto mechanic, anything you've done, if you think about it, if you've got any experience teaching, you'll know that that's true. And it's just as true with survival skills and things relating to a team. All right, well, we've officially killed the heck out of about 20 minutes here. Hopefully I hit upon something that was helpful in some way. That's kind of my overall view of things relating to a survival team. And like I said, I mean, people have different opinions. I didn't want to get too bogged down into the details because ultimately, how I choose to do things, how my team chooses to do things, is not really as important as finding out what's going to work for you in your situation, and your terrain, and with your people, and the experiences that you have. That's ultimately what you have to find out, and you've got to do it for yourself. Pretty much, you have to get out there and just do it. I'm hitting the Nike slogans fierce tonight, huh? Well, there you have it. There's my overall overview of a lot of the things relating to a survival team. Basically, find some good people, build a team, learn some skills, teach some skills, and keep moving. That's what it's all about. Some things you might find interesting if you're just getting into this and you're just starting to really think about this, or you're refining or reworking some of your ideas relating to this, Some things I'd recommend reading are, two of them are, you can find links to them right on this outside site here. Things Fall Apart by Fred Heiser, and When Autumn Leaves Fall by Andrew Zerwini. Good stories, well worth a read, some interesting ideas in both of them. Probably one of the most prolific epic sagas in survival fiction is something that's really, it's almost a manual for of what to do and what not to do in certain ways. Masquerading as a book is The Patriot, or I believe it's called Patriots, Surviving the Coming Collapse. That's by James Wesley Rawls. Unfortunately, it's not online anymore. It was an online novel for a while. I guess I shouldn't say unfortunately, because it's back in print. You can probably find it on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or any of your major online book places. You should be able to look up Patriots, Surviving the Coming Collapse, James Wesley Rawls, and find it. Well worth buying. If you are just starting out your survival library or starting to read things on this subject, definitely worth picking up. For a lot of us, it really marked a turning point in the way we started to think about it. Not to say that everything in there is exactly right, but it makes you think. It's very interesting. For me, it's right up there with The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert A. Heinlein. Also an excellent author. It masquerades, that book masquerades as a science fiction book, but I think it's actually more of a socio-political commentary, if you ask me. But yeah, some interesting things to read if you get a chance and you're interested in that kind of thing. Anyway, we'll wrap this up, and I hope you found it helpful or informative, at least entertaining, and we'll see you on the other side. Hey, hello there once again. Welcome to another